RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to a very special Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Crisco Face Val.
And Beans, why?
It's getting to that point in the summer now where it is nothing but sticky, humid, Crisco face nonsense. Ugh. Where I wake up five times every night to go wash my face because I feel like somebody smeared Crisco all over it. Hate it.
Did you see the meme that I sent you where somebody, or the GIF, where somebody like took you out saying, shut the F up?
Oh, yes.
How great was that?
It was kind of surreal to see. There's been one or two of those little moving images I've seen, and a little surreal to see them of me, but that was funny.
It's because you're famous.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Today's a very special day because we have a longtime listener of ours who commented on a YouTube video I put up that I actually saw saying that tomorrow is her birthday and it would make her day if we would shout out her birthday. I don't know, which is on it.
Oh.
It's an honor. But Robin, happy birthday.
Rockin' Robin.
Rockin' Robin.
Doop. Happy birthday, doop. Robin.
Yeah. Why not, right?
Oh, absolutely. I love saying happy birthdays to people.
So much fun.
And I love the name Robin.
Robin's a great name. Absolutely. Somebody emailed me, somebody very, very kind, and said, Tracy, I heard you talking about how people forget that it's your birthday. So I went out and got you a birthday card, but I don't know where to send it. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so kind of you.
Wait, Tracy, you're going to kill me, but when's your birthday?
You don't mean that. You're a liar. You know exactly when my birthday is.
Maybe I do, but maybe I've forgotten since last year.
Or the other day when we talked about it.
Oh, that's right.
You're a liar. You're a big fat liar. A Crisco faced liar.
You're right. It is a Crisco faced kind of a day. Okay, so we have a lot to do.
We do have a lot to do. Thank you for redirecting me into news. So I'm kind of torn on where we start. Do we start by exemplifying stupidity? Or do we start by talking about some serious stuff? What do you think we should?
Let's get the stupidity out of the way.
All right. So we've got the squad, Frank. I don't even want to call them that.
Yep. Don't brand them. They're just idiots.
I don't want to brand these people. Like, I just get these horrible images in my head of like bad cartoons and like the ambiguously gay duo when I say the squad.
Yeah, they should be wearing like bandanas and like Zorro masks and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's what it reminds me of.
Right.
But we had this
like a Hanna-Barbera kind of I don't like Hanna-Barbera, but like a Hanna-Barbera kind of villain that has a very thin handlebar mustache or something.
Yeah. You think of Hanna-Barbera and it's Yogi Bear, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like that. Just my thing. So we had President Trump come out and say, if you don't like it here, you can leave and go back to where you came from and make it better there. And then you can come back if you want once you've accomplished that. Or you can stay there. Whatever you want to do. And apparently now, that makes him racist.
Well, the thing here is that when you tell someone, and of course, everybody goes into the nitty-gritty details and the technicalities that 3 out of 4 of these women were born in the United States. I'm like, sure, okay, fine, they're residents, they're citizens, but they're not of the United States. When you talk about the things that they talk about, the modes of government, the social inertia, whatever the hell it is that they have dedicated themselves to every day, you wonder where they're representing and what they represent. I mean, that Ayanna Pressley woman, she represents the Massachusetts 7th District. And she's sitting there talking about she's talking about pretty much being a voice for brown skin people. And I'm thinking to myself, is there not one white? Is this 7th district of Massachusetts all black, gay, and Muslim? Because she's talking about. I just don't understand.
You know, she took money from Epstein in 2018.
They're all nuts. And that's what is really going on here. They don't represent an American way of thinking. They're not even representing their districts. They don't. They pander to a district to get into a seat, and then they start talking to the whole country about how we have to change the country from its root all the way on up.
Yeah.
So
for them.
It's not American, so I don't understand.
So I have a bunch of – so they had this hearing yesterday in the House. They spent hours on it. I mean, most of the people that I saw, even people from the left, because I float around all kinds of Twitter, are saying this is really ridiculous. Can you guys spend this much time on real issues like fixing the border? Or, you know, some of them were saying blanket minimum wage or whatever. They're like all frustrated for their own reasons, like looking at this charade, this escapade, this dog and pony show, and saying, we don't agree with this at all. Like, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Right. And it resulted in I was working on a piece all day yesterday, so I tried to get my arms around this, but it basically resulted in Nancy Pelosi getting reprimanded by the parliamentarian for calling Donald Trump a racist, which is against the rules on the House floor. And then them voting to strike her words, her storming out like a child, which is also against the rules, her coming back, the majority voting to put her words back on the record, and then voting to ignore their own rule and allow her to stay for the rest of the hearing.
Ugh.
This is what's going on in the halls of government in this country.
Oh, God. I didn't even know all that. I just stayed away.
Yeah, I did, too, until I was forced to look at it because.
God.
Yeah, it was really, really. It was real. And then the gentleman, I don't know his name, who took over for Pelosi was so like flustered. I don't know for what reason, whether it was because of the left or the right. I don't know. Threw the gavel down and left, too. I can't stay here anymore.
I don't know why anybody thinks that. Oh, my God.
So
never mind.
From this, we got a number of really sort of patriotic things coming out of Republican representatives, including Liz Cheney, which, again, we've brought her up once before and said, you know, she's a Cheney. But she was defending Trump on Spygate on one program. We played the clip on the show. And now this is a little bit long, to be honest, but I really want to play it for everybody. It's 3 minutes long. What do you think? Should we play it?
Yeah, if you think it's good, let's go for it.
I really do. It's a tweet from her. She says, our opposition to our socialist colleagues isn't because of their race, religion, or gender. It's because their policies are dangerous, wrong, and would destroy America. And she's standing there with Steve Scalise behind her. And I'm going to play it.
Great.
Religion or what?
Hold on. I'm not prepared as usual. I just want to make it louder. Okay.
But first, I wanted to talk about what's gone on over the last few days. I want to make absolutely clear that our opposition to our socialist colleagues has absolutely nothing to do with their gender, with their religion, or with their race. It has to do with the content of their policies. They're wrong when they attempt to impose the fraud of socialism on the American people. They're wrong when they pursue policies that would steal power from the American people and give that power to the government. They're wrong when they espouse and enable and their leadership refuses to condemn vile anti-Semitism. They're wrong when they rush to blame America first, when they fail to recognize that this is the greatest nation that has ever existed, the exceptional nation. And they're wrong when they fail to recognize that no people has ever lived in greater freedom. And then they go on and fail to provide the resources our men and women in uniform need to defend that freedom. Our colleagues, our socialist colleagues on the other side of the aisle, are wrong when they advocate abortion up until the moment of birth, including partial term abortion, partial birth abortion, late term abortion. And when they refuse to mandate care for babies who are born alive. Our colleagues are wrong when they say that we should open America's borders, abolish ICE, and abolish DHS. They're wrong when they advocate policies that would eliminate all private health insurance in this country, destroy Medicare, and force the American people to pay for free health care for illegal immigrants. They're wrong when they pursue policies like the one we're going to be voting on today that will destroy 4 million jobs for low-wage earners by mandating a federal $15 minimum wage. That is not compassion. That's a callousness that's born of ignorance. They're wrong when they say that their programs help people at the lower end of the economic spectrum. Every one of their socialist programs would create massive new government dependency and end the very economic growth we need to ensure everyone can prosper. Our colleagues are wrong when they advocate packing the Supreme Court and abolishing the Electoral College. And our colleagues are wrong when they tell Americans, as Congresswoman Presley did just last weekend, that any individual seat at the table is only valuable, only legitimate, if that person espouses some pre-approved set of beliefs deemed appropriate based on their religion or their gender or their race. When they say that, that is racist. So, no, our opposition to our colleagues' beliefs has absolutely nothing to do with race or gender or religion. We oppose them and their policies because their policies are dangerous and wrong and would destroy America. The issue here is the content of their policies, and we will continue to stand up and fight against what we know is wrong for this nation.
Well, she's not wrong on a lot of it.
There were some things in there that I didn't necessarily agree with, but
Well, first of all, the Republican Party is, there's an old saying, I know a lot of people out there have heard it, that the Democrat Party is an evil party and the Republican Party is a stupid party. They are compliant, they capitulate, and they have been capitulating for decades, which is why we are where we are right now. They are not without blame. They love unsound money. They love protectionism. They're not exactly really pro-privacy. DHS is, the existence of DHS should be something that makes conservatives skin crawl.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's a lot of things going on, but you know what she's saying, the spirit of it is true. Now if
One of the things I shared this morning, it's funny that you say that because it's true. For years and years and years, there was a brilliant thread that Jeff tweeted the other day from the markets work, from Epoch Times now. He tweeted this thread about like the strategy or the kind of like place where we are now in regards to what has been accepted behavior in the past coming out of the Republican Party in terms of what the left has done. And they have capitulated over and over and over out of whatever it may be, fear of the lynch mob, whatever. And then Donald Trump comes in and everything changes and they're starting to realize either, wow, it's safe for me to talk now. It's like my thing in the beginning of a change, a patriot is scarce man, brave and hated and scorned. But after a while, the timid join him for then, you know, I'm butchering it. But, you know, it's the Mark Twain quote about being a patriot. So Donald Trump comes in and says, you know what? We don't have to take this crap. I'm going to say whatever the hell I want and I don't have to bow down to these people. And now it's getting easier to do that. So Donald Trump shared a tweet this morning. It says, in America, if you hate our country, you're free to leave. The simple fact of the matter is the four congresswomen think that America is wicked in its origins. They think America is even more wicked now that we're all racist and evil. They're entitled to their opinion. They're Americans. Now, I'm entitled to my opinion, and I just think they're left-wing cranks. They're the reason there are directions on a shampoo bottle, and we should ignore them. The squad, in quotes, has moved the Democratic Party substantially left, and they're destroying the Democrat Party. I'm appalled that so many of our presidential candidates are falling all over themselves to try to agree with the four horsewomen of the apocalypse. I'm entitled to say that they're whack jobs. Louisiana Senator John Kennedy.
That's great. Four horsewomen of the apocalypse.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't say it any better, right? And so like people are just getting brave and they're speaking out in plain language that the American people tend to resonate towards. You know, we've always been an anti-PC culture. Comedians would tiptoe the line, like the George Carlin skit, the five words you can't say. I mean, it's just so we have CNN interviewing eight Republican women trying to convince them that Trump is a racist. Right. And one of these women eventually calls them out on their manipulative tactics of the way they ask the questions. I mean, it was just brilliant. It's another 3-minute clip. And I know that people don't like to listen to, you know, this long of clips, but we could stop this one and talk about it because I think that I don't think CNN brought them on because they thought that they'd be like, oh, no, we do think it's racist. Obviously, they wanted to showcase the fact that here are eight women who, you know, agree with the white supremacy coming from the Trump administration. Right.
Right.
So it's interesting the way they flip it on her and the fact that they actually aired it. So let's play a little.
I'm trying to think here now, though, as far as the Four Horsemen goes.
Hmm.
I think that Ayanna Pressley would be death. I think that war. Rashida Tlaib would definitely be war.
Yeah.
Pestilence would be Sandy, and then Lollipop is what's the other one? There's pestilence, death, war, and what's the other one? What's the fourth horseman?
Horseman of the apocalypse. There is.
Famine?
Why can't I just get a quick answer, for goodness sakes?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. Either way. I don't know. But the other one's the last one.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fine. You know, Crisco looks really good on you, Frank. Makes you a little snarky. It's good.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. We're going to listen to Cooper. Hold on.
Next year, voters are, of course, going to have their say. So we were curious whether the president's base was still behind him, particularly his female supporters. Did any object to his racist attack on the four female lawmakers? Or is it all just...
Can I just stop it for a second? Did any object to the way they talk? People listen to them. They're manipulating you. Trying to do it subconsciously, but even the cadence of the voices, the pauses, the, you know what I mean?
It's magic. And I was looking at there was a CNN ticker. No, there's a CNN lower third. Somebody took a screenshot of yesterday. I thought it was absolutely amazing. The lower third on CNN says, President Trump says his racist remarks were not racist. That one. Third.
Oh, we are definitely in the freaking Twilight Zone, I swear. And you know, I've been thinking about it, and I think that their hubris will cause it to be that they cannot adapt their strategy.
You know, I here's the thing I don't get. If they were not able to pull this off in 2016, after 4 years of the Trump administration and whoever is working in that military intelligence, anybody that's loyal to this country, with 4 years of a presidency that is friendly to actual Republicanism, little R Republicanism, how the hell? I really hope. I mean, I know that there's the whole ballot harvesting thing and what people do on the local level to stuff ballots and steal districts, but oh, man, I would love to see an even bigger landslide in 2020 than 2016.
On the day after Election Day, Frank, if we look back and we have taken the House of Representatives back and we have the Senate and we have the presidency, the next.
Then they have nothing left.
We will not allow even ongoing in that term for inaction. We just will not allow it. They had better get everything done. I don't want to hear one damn excuse about anything.
The other thing here is, too, you want to talk about playing with house money. Number one, Donald Trump was a long shot, according to some people or many people in 2016, where you're looking at 98% polling going in the opposite direction. And now he came on in, he had the House, he had the Senate. There wasn't a really good group of people, a lot of bad people left, self-filtration. Let's hope that we get some more people coming on in. But here's where 2020 is really interesting for the entire situation here. If Democrats had a very mediocre midterm election, if they lose the House again in 2020 and the Senate is maintained in 2020 and Donald Trump gets reelected, there is literally nothing. There is nothing that the media can hang their hat on at that point. There is nothing.
No.
They can't talk about anything.
No.
There's no foreign interference. There's no momentum. They have lost everything. The 2020 is so much more detrimental for the left than it could possibly be for Donald Trump. All he needs to do is get reelected. And that would say more than enough, because the swing states are completely turned off by where Democrat Party is going. But as far as the House goes, oh, my God, Tracy, if there's a swing back, that would be devastating in a great way.
We'd see screaming in the streets again. Hold on one second. I agree with you on 2020 completely. I just want to see it. I want to see the crying. I want to see it. I want to see us take this country back to a place where, you know, we have ridiculously awesome success. Because I think that the second term, too, it's like even some of the holdovers that are, you know, we have a bunch of them in the Republican Party that are still kind of holdovers. But I think even they realize like what could have been if they would have just for the first whatever years, 2 years, gotten up off their tuchuses and done the right thing. And gotten some of this stuff done, like instead of being held to this extremist, tyrannical left that has come in now, they were still afraid of them, Frank.
Yeah. Well, you know me. I know that change is going to be very small and incremental. I still have hope that a lot could be done, but nothing's really going to change until we have a crop of people in there that know what really needs to be done, and that is downsizing.
Yeah.
Downsizing.
Completely downsizing. Like, people sometimes look at us like we're crazy when we say there shouldn't be a Department of Homeland Security.
It's only been there since 2002. It was like, how did we survive without it? It's 2002? Oh, my God.
I know. But the problem is, they, you know, everyone points to 9/11 and says, we needed it.
Yeah, and still, yeah, DHS, that's when your TSA showed up. And how many terrorist attacks have been prevented by TSA? None.
Well, I mean, they miss things all the time. So I
none.
Here, let's listen to the rest of Cooper here.
Politics, as Mike said earlier, 360's Randy Kaye spoke with some of them in Dallas.
How many of you don't think what the president said was racist? Raise your hand.
These eight Republican women from Dallas don't see anything wrong with President Trump telling four Democratic congresswomen to go back where they came from.
He was saying that if they hate America so much because what we're seeing out of them and hearing out of them, they hate America. If it's so bad, there's a lot of places they can go.
I'm a brown-skinned woman. I am a legal immigrant. I agree with him.
Yeah. I don't think that's racist to say that.
Not at all.
Where you
no, actually, I think it's it's a demonstration of how their ideology spills over. Even though they're American now, so to speak, they're not acting Americanly.
I'm glad that the president said what he said, because all they're doing is they're inciting hatred and division, and that's not what our country's about. It's not about that at all. And
isn't that what the president does with some of his own comments, his own racist comments?
But he didn't say anything about color.
I know the president is not racist. He loves people from, you know, Hispanics, the black people, all across the board.
Let me just share with you the definition of racism from the Merriam-Webster Dictionary.
Let me share with you. She's going to the dictionary.
Let me tell you something. That part of it just, I literally fell off my chair in hysterics.
Let me show. And meanwhile, she's defending four women who have based everything on solely identity, not about ideas, not about individual liberty, not about the faith that no matter who you are and what you look like and where you came from, you can do it on your own without our help.
Yeah. And
she's pulling this out when all they have is race theory.
There's another clip that I shared on my Twitter this morning where I think it's Rashida Tlaib is talking to someone about Nancy Pelosi and saying she could come to us. She can pull us aside and talk to us. She's the Speaker of the House. And then she goes, you know, and she should remember we're women of color. And she should remember that when she talks about us and what it could mean.
That's right. That's right. But let me take out the Webster Merriam dictionary for you and tell you what racism means.
Just because you guys don't know, apparently you don't understand. Let's listen to her read the dictionary of racism out of the dictionary definition here.
Okay. A belief that race is the primary determinant of human traits and capacities, and that racial differences produce an inherent superiority of a particular race. Based on that definition.
Yes.
Where? Now, if I were this dingbat on CNN sitting in front of these women and I pulled out the dictionary to read off this definition,
I'd be like,
as
oh,
I was reading it, I would have had a few things go off in my head. Number one, how does any of this even apply to the tweets? He said there's nothing even that he said that has anything to do with saying this because of their race. This is a difference between Americanism and the rest of the world. I mean, she's such an idiot.
She is an idiot. So she reads that and you know, like anybody sitting there objectively is like, oh, that sounds like everyone else that you guys are parroting out there for us to support. Like any thinking person, that definition doesn't apply to him at all. Like, I don't know. Here.
I mean, was this not the thing?
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, did they not watch the Democrat debates 2 weeks ago?
I know.
It was the entire thing.
She says now, do you not see how this is, you know, what he's saying is racist? Here.
No, he dated a black woman for 2 years. Two of his wives are immigrants. He is not a xenophobic racist.
If the first black billionaire is endorsing President Trump, how can you call him racist?
So these congressmen who said they ran for Congress, ran for office because they explicitly love this country, you're saying that's a lie.
So yes.
You're saying they hate this country.
Yes. Do you ever brought these questions up? It's plainly that they're very manipulative to accuse instead of extracting the truth.
It's a tactic.
Because when you say...
Tracy, have you ever heard of a politician who ever ran for office who didn't have absolute love for their country? Have you ever heard of somebody who ran for a seat of power who didn't do so out of just the untarnished love for their country and nothing else? Nothing else. How amazing is that just to say, wait, are you telling me that these women ran because they had other motives that are contrary to the country's founding? I mean, are you kidding me? And not only that, going back to those Democratic debates again, the two nights combined was a contest to see who on stage could be as least white as possible.
Yep.
Who can speak as many foreign languages as possible? Who can be? I mean, this was all about separating yourself from something that you believe is framed by race. Everything they are is racism. It's sick. Their economic plans are racist. You have what's his name? Chuck Schumer, the vampire from New York City, Count Dracula, is coming out today talking about I am for reparations for slavery now. I can't believe it.
There's actually video of somebody, I forget who it is, like leading a force. I don't want to say forcing, but motivating a crowd of white people to apologize to the black people for slavery and what there is crazy. Normal people think this is crazy. They just do. I want them to keep it up. It is like they're oh goodness. I want them to keep it up. I want them to keep doing this. Honestly,
the worst thing that can happen to Donald Trump's chances for re-election right now is that one of the candidates who's actually polling in the positive, suggests a tax break. Suggests cutting taxes.
Right.
That's the worst thing, to say something moderate. That is the worst thing.
We have one more clip to listen to from this little group of clips. And then we're gonna listen to something funny that something wicked on Twitter sent me this morning that he did. And then we'll move into the news. Because we could really spend an hour on this. We really could. Here is Ayanna Pressley, a.k.a. I accepted money from Jeffrey Epstein in the last election cycle, talking about talking about her supremacy. I'll just say it like that.
Yes, I do quote Shirley Chisholm a lot, who said, if they don't give you a seat at the table, bring your own folding chair. But I've amended that because I don't want to bring a chair to an old table. This is the time to shake the table. This is the time to redefine that table.
Girl.
Because if you're going to come to this table, and if all of you that have aspirations of running for office, for whatever lived experience and identity that you represent, if you are not prepared to come to that table and to represent that voice, don't come. Because we don't need any more brown faces that don't want to be a brown voice. We don't need black faces that don't want to be a black voice. We don't need Muslims that don't want to be a Muslim voice. We don't need queers that don't want to be a queer voice.
You know what she never said in any of that? America.
Mm-hmm.
She never said American once.
There's more to it, but I just want to say that Brandon especially takes ridiculous offense to the term queer because he's older and he remembers the derogatory nature of it. And we've talked about this before. And he's like, you can't say that term and then just expect people, it's a slur. And he said, that's like me saying a black slur and just getting away with it because I'm gay.
No, I get you. I grew up with queer being a slur as well. Yeah. I mean, it was only until recently I was like, okay, I guess this is acceptable now.
Yeah, I know. It's
is
weird.
Is this a clinical term now?
Here's the rest of her nonsense.
And if you're worried about being marginalized and stereotyped, please don't even show up.
Right. She just marginalized and stereotyped every single group she mentioned.
Last night I played that part of her little rant there too, and that's the first thing I said. if you feel like you're going to be marginalized or stereotyped, don't show up, because we need the stereotypes. We're looking for stereotypes right now.
Oh Lord, that's sure. It on that.
Yeah.
There's a funny commercial or a funny ad or a funny meme that something wicked sent me. I'm going to spell it out because he's got really good stuff. It's at SOM3 thing wicked, spelt normal. So the E is a 3. It's funny. I think we can do it justice with sound. It's called Donald Trump Presents Real Stable Genius.
Yes. Trump presents Real Stable Genius.
Real Stable Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Greatest President Ever.
Mr. Greatest President Ever.
You do what lesser presidents can only dream. Smash Democrats and keep America great.
Exclamation point.
8 years of failure under Obama, no problem. You'll have that shit handled by lunch.
Hail to the chief!
Armed with only talent, you battle fake news, phony witch hunts, and that awful Jim Acosta.
That's enough. Put down the
collusion. You don't need no stinking collusion.
No!
So crack open a nice cold Diet Coke, Mr. President for eternity, and then crack open another for your victory in 2020 and 2024 and 2028.
It's actually really funny if you watch it, like the scenes that he put up with it are really good.
I remember the
Budweiser.
I remember all those commercials.
And then they were like, it was really funny. That was I showed my parents, because you got to be, well, when did those commercials come out? They were in the 90s?
Late 90s, I think.
Yeah. So.
And then all the parodies came out.
Yep, which were funny.
Right. I think Saturday Night Live, when they were funny, they started doing that.
Listen, you need to laugh at these people. You need to laugh at them. So there's the end of that segment. Thanks for making it through with us.
Of course.
I think you're going to need to use Crisco face more often because it's really making me giggle inside every time I think of it.
It's the only feeling. It's the only thing I can describe the feeling.
Okay. Let's move on to the revelation in the Seth Rich saga, shall we?
Yeah.
So you did a good segment on your show about this stuff last night. So chime in as you will, because I didn't get to see it yet. But I know that we talked about it and what you were going to do. And it sounded like it was going to be fantastic. Ed Batowski is... It's so complicated, the story. Do you want to just go through the Seth Rich story in an abridged way?
You mean the new revelations?
The background of it. Do you think people know all the background?
I believe so. Okay, well, Seth Rich, you have a... He was in charge of new voter registration for the Democrat Party, right?
Yes.
So they that's another thing that people like Michael Isikoff try to marginalize here. They call him a staffer, a low-level staffer or anything like that. He actually had a pretty important job. He's...
Where'd you go? Oh, I lost you for a second there.
Did you hear any of that?
He actually had a pretty important job, and then you cut out.
He had a pretty important job. He was working for the DNC for new voter registration. But did you get the part about Michael Isikoff?
Yes.
Okay, so there's a lot of things that are going on here, and of course he was shot dead in July of 2016, and there's a lot of speculation about why that was happening and what the motivation for the death was, especially because the police ruled it to be a botched robbery, which he was shot twice and nothing was taken off of him. And it was all around the time that we were getting all of these emails being leaked. People in the emails talking about certain people should be made examples of. But the thing here that I think everybody should start separating, and I wanted to really drive that home yesterday, was that there are two things that are going on here. Number one, the question is, was Seth Rich the one who gave all of this information, all of these emails from the DNC to WikiLeaks? And number two, what were the circumstances surrounding his death? They're two separate things.
Agreed.
Okay, because even if he did come home from a bar that night and it was just an awful – I mean, the death is tragic no matter what. He has two parents that are grieving no matter what. He's got a brother, and the death is tragic either way you slice it. But as far as the first question is so monumental to modern American history, it needs to be answered, because as we are seeing right now, at every turn – the Russia hacking the DNC narrative is really being destroyed everywhere by judges, by investigative journalists, by NSA analysts like Bill Binney, by Julian Assange, by Cy Hirsch, by whoever's on out there. It's really interesting. And then, of course, we have these new dots that have emerged that need to be connected. And you want to talk about those dots?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple players that we need a kind of glossary on so we understand who they are. There's Ed Batowski, who was a wealth management, sort of asset management guy who got drawn into the Seth Rich saga. And we never really understood why. But Batowski contacted the Rich family to talk to them about their son's death, and then hired on behalf of the Rich family Rod Wheeler, who was a former MPD detective who came in to do a private investigation into the death of Seth Rich. And then on top of that, there was Brad Bauman, who was a fixer, so to speak, or a publicist or a PR guy, a damage control guy. And depending on what you say, he'll sue you. So you have to be very careful. But he was called in to work with the family, not on their behest, but on the behest of the DNC, which is interesting. And he came in to work with the family. We had Matt Couch, who assembled a team to try and figure this out from a grassroots level. We had Jack Berkman, who came in at the very beginning and start. He's a DNC, an RNC strategist, kind of like a back end. He's a very shady character, in my opinion, who comes in and starts working on the death as well and kind of hijacks that narrative to be his own. What other characters do we have in the story? There's a few other characters in the story. Malia Zimmerman, who wrote an article for Fox News about all of this. Julian Assange, obviously. Donna Brazile is a factor here because she wrote the dedication to her book to Seth Rich. And in her book said that she stayed in her office with the curtains closed out of fear of what could happen. Very odd. We have Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was wrapped up in all of this as well because she was the head of the DNC at the time that this happened. We have
refusing to let anybody go near those servers. And also not only that, just to remind everybody there, the CrowdStrike revelations over just in June of this year. Not only do we know that CrowdStrike, which is this private company that's friendly to the Clintons and Google and all that stuff, came in and provided the narrative to the FBI that James Comey's FBI just said sounds good to me. They provided the narrative that Russia hacked the DNC to the FBI. Nobody asked for anything. Just in June, we learned that not only did CrowdStrike not, or the FBI, who was it, that they did not view the unredacted draft report about the DNC servers.
The FBI.
The FBI. The FBI never saw the final report or even requested one. It was never even made. So this was really just friends of the DNC and the Clinton campaign telling the FBI what to tell the public. And they completely spun an entire investigation based on it.
Yes, that's very important as well. We also had, if you don't remember, Frank, and CrowdStrike is a huge part of this for so many more reasons, too. And that's why I think Frank chose to focus on it. And I think we should definitely focus on it because CrowdStrike comes into play all over the place here. And this is the thing, like you could take CrowdStrike, Frank, and do 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 words on just CrowdStrike. Somebody needs to write a book. You want to do it?
I don't know. I don't know if I have the guts.
You're a good writer. You're a good writer. I'm sorry.
Not like this.
You have your friend that can help you proofread.
Creative. She's a literature major. She's got a master's in literature, American literature. We're talking creative writing here, not investigative, not journalism. And I'm not. That's not me.
All right. Fine.
It's you. That's all you.
No.
Uncovered DC is going to put out an anthology of
terms,
books
people.
On this.
Yeah, I mean, for real, it could be an anthology. In August, I would write a book, but people would accuse me of doing it for money. So I'm deciding not to do that.
What are you going to do? Publish a PDF?
Yeah. No, I'm not allowed to write a book because it would be just a headache for me. It would be nothing but a headache if I wrote a book.
Tracy, I think that you need to stop listening to people.
It's just true.
It's just you listen, you're a player in the market. If you put you put effort into something and you put your time into something, if people think that it's a scam, then they're not going to spend their money on it. You're not pushing it on anybody.
No, but I should give away everything for free.
Yes. Well, you should live in a hovel, too.
Anyway, in August 2016, rumors began circulating that a name blast from the past, Sean Lucas. Do you remember him?
Why do I? It sounds familiar. Who is this again?
He was the gentleman that served the DNC and Debbie Wasserman Schultz with the lawsuit on behalf of Jared Beck. He was found dead in his apartment unexpectedly of supposedly a drug overdose. That was another one that's attached to this. Then there was another name also attached in this sort of a scheme. Wisent from down in Florida, who was found dead on a beach with blunt force trauma to the back of the head. He actually was in government and was working on election stuff and fraud. So there's a lot of peripheral figures here. But anyway, what ends up happening is, and there, the reason why we're talking about this is because on the 15th, there was a new filing, an amended complaint filed in a lawsuit that Butowski has going against a number of different parties for defamation, et cetera, so on and so forth. Because as details of this story started to come out, the power brokers or former power brokers decided that they can't have the truth coming out about this, because if it did, it would destroy everything that they had worked to perpetuate in the minds of the American public for years. It would just, so what happened? They labeled everybody talking about Seth Rich a conspiracy theorist. They labeled the people intimately involved in uncovering information conspiracy theorists and all kinds of horrible names. They've barred them from, they've sued them into oblivion. I mean, if Patowski didn't have a lot of money, he'd be done for. I know that there was a video of Matt Couch the other day floating around where he says he's lost everything. He's involved in several lawsuits himself. I don't have any view of him either one way or the other. Some people like him, some people hate him, but it doesn't matter. Either he didn't handle himself right or he did and he just got messed. I don't know what happened. So I worked with them for a month or so in the very beginning and I left. It just wasn't a fit for me. So we have all this in this lawsuit. Patowski is suing all of these folks, the New York Times, Anderson Cooper, Time Warner, all kinds of different people. And in there, he says we learn the reason why he approached the Rich family in the first place. And he says it was because he was approached by Ellen Ratner. Ellen Ratner is a former Fox News contributor and a White House correspondent for a news outlet who is the sister of Michael Ratner, who was the attorney for Edward Snowden and Julian Assange and several other whistleblower types at a very high level like that. She was on her way back from a trip and stopped at the embassy in 2016 to talk to Assange. And apparently, as per Batowski, who has text messages and emails to back this up, Assange told her, get this information to Seth Rich's parents. Seth and Aaron, the brother still living, were the ones who gave me the emails from the DNC. And she goes to Ed Batowski and says, Ed, can you please help me to get this information to the Rich family? Ed sits on it and doesn't do anything with it because he's like, I'm not getting involved in this, right? Sits on it and doesn't do anything about it for a year or so. And then all of a sudden he's like, you know what? I'm tired of seeing this Russia, Russia, Russia nonsense on the television and all this hoopla when there's information that it wasn't even the Russians that did this. It was Seth Rich and his brother. So he goes to the Rich family and he talks to them. After a while, ends up hiring Rod Wheeler for them, paying for it. And Ed Batowski is now forever linked to the Seth Rich saga. That's a bombshell sort of release. And the reason why it came out is because, you know, we talked about the Isikoff article. You're very quiet, Frank. Please interrupt me if you want to.
I'm listening.
Okay. We talked about the Isikoff article last week when we were both looking at each other like, this is just really weird. Why the hell is this coming out now? You know, we know it's an anniversary, but this is just nonsense. And you shared the link to the story debunking the IRA. And then we talked about Concord Management and all of that.
And then here comes this.
And then here comes this. And you know what's interesting is I talked to Ed Batowski yesterday and I quoted him for the article in Uncover DC that I wrote explaining the story yesterday. He reached out to Isikoff before, you know, he reached out to him. He said he'd seen videos and stuff of Isikoff and thought that he was wanting the truth. Now, I mean, okay. Bad judgment, I guess, but reached out to Isikoff and started explaining to him, please, please, please understand, this is what happened. And Isikoff refused to believe him, no matter what he said, no matter what he did, no matter what he showed him. You know, because there's that site out there, debunkingrodsclaims.net, and on there is a list of all kinds of information and there's video clips and audio recordings and all kinds of stuff. And so he told him all this and Isikoff refused to believe it and just kept saying, no, it was Russia. It was Russia. And now listen to me. I'll be honest. Me as like someone sitting here, I know that there's got to be the chances that Isikoff doesn't know that what he's pushing is bull are slim to none. Do you agree with me?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the timeline actually suggests that the July 9th article that he put out was he had to get that when he was writing it. He knew it was all nonsense.
Yes.
But it was a job. It was a reinforcement job is what it was. It was a patch job. Wanted to make sure everybody had all of this stuff nice and fresh in their heads.
Yes. And so he talks to Isikoff and he says the last straw for him to try and get him to believe her. or to try and get Isikoff to believe him, him being Batowski, is to share with Isikoff the story about Ellen Ratner that had been not released anywhere for years. He had never talked about that before, ever. And he told Isikoff, Isikoff said, can I contact her? And he told Isikoff, no, this is completely off the record. I don't want you reaching out to her. And Isikoff said, okay. What did Isikoff do? He broke every last damn rule of journalistic ethics known to God and on God's green earth and went to Ellen Ratner about it.
Now, what did she say from there?
I don't remember if I'm allowed to tell anybody, so I can't say.
Okay.
I just can't. I don't remember. It was a long conversation I had, and I have to clarify with Ed because some of it was on the record and some of it was off the record. And I know because I clarified what I was allowed. You know, I wrote down quotes and whatever, and I was scribbling furiously during the conversation. But I just have to clarify in my head what I am and allowed to talk about and not.
Well, inside of this, on the LawFlog blog entry, when he's pretty much putting out sections of this lawsuit.
Yep.
Very provocative stuff in there, especially when it's talking about the Rich family and Seth Rich's parents.
Yep.
Knowing that he and Aaron were the ones that provided the DNC emails, but they didn't want to say anything because they didn't want the country thinking that they were responsible for getting Trump elected. That was very disturbing to me.
There's more than that, too.
Very disturbing to me. But aside from, you know, what is... Is this all backed up by recorded interviews? Where is the meat of this going to be when backing up all the stuff written in this lawsuit?
So I talked to Ty Clevenger, who's the attorney, right? Before I jump into that, though, I just want to say they knew as soon as they were approached with the information from Ellen Ratner, they were like, we know about that already. Hello? Are you serious right now? Not only that, but in the lawsuit too, there was a there was another lawsuit where Joel Rich sued Ed Batowski, because there are several of them. The Rich family sued Fox News and Ed Batowski. Bauman sued Ed Batowski. Aaron Rich sued Ed Batowski. Like, they're suing up the wazoo. There's all these different lawsuits. And in the lawsuits from Aaron Rich against Batowski, he Ty Clevenger, who we're going to talk about in a second, who's the attorney for Batowski, said to Aaron Rich's attorneys, we want you to sign a waiver allowing, like, giving the okay for WikiLeaks to disclose what, if any, connection Assange had or WikiLeaks had with Seth Rich or Aaron Rich. And he refused to do it. So Ty Clevenger said, well, I don't understand. If there's nothing here, why not just sign the waiver? And they wouldn't do it. They're like, we'll subpoena for information rather than signing a waiver. It doesn't make any sense. So they never ended up subpoenaing. And I believe that suit was dismissed. So there's
that. That part of the lawsuit is so disturbing to me because if there's one thing, I said this last night, if there's one thing that we could actually definitively take away from this bullshit investigation that has to do with Russia is that not one vote was changed because of any of this stuff, that the DNC know that this really did not hurt anybody's opinion of what was going on there. People did not want Hillary Clinton.
Well, I think that the DNC emails had a large effect on the outcome of the election, to be honest. Bernie supporters read those emails and just lost their mind and wouldn't support Hillary. A lot of them swapped their thinking based on the true information provided to them by the DNC emails.
It's very upsetting to even hear that from the parents. I know that they're grieving parents and they're just thinking about their son. But as far as the political implications, this is regardless of what you think about Trump. If you think that the guy is a flawed or a damaged or character or is deficient in some kind of a way, that is nothing compared to a mob of people who have infested not only a major political party, but the surveillance state, the media that are working against the interests of not only Democrat voters, but the United States, because this went outside of the it went outside the bounds of the United States, and it immediately started impacting the way that we interfaced with other countries.
I know. It was global in its scope. And, you know, to be honest, Frank, I don't know. Like, I find it hard to believe that that's the only reason. It could be the only reason if they're that fervent. And you know how people are in terms of Donald Trump and him being elected and what he represents, and thinking that your son's legacy could be tainted by electing Donald Trump president or being a contributing factor to it. But I asked, like, because there's, you know, there I've read hundreds and hundreds of complaints in lawsuits. And you're right. Reading through this, there are some print screens and text messages. And you know, there are things that lend credence to what they're saying in this complaint. And I said, you know, anybody can write a complaint in a lawsuit and just, you know, throw whatever they want in there. Because we've seen it when the DNC sues people. They just throw nonsense into their complaint, right?
Right.
I said, are you going to be able in a court of law to prove all of the things that you assert in the lawsuit, meaning things that are not ambiguous, things that are not questiony, things where they say we're not sure, but because there are statements in there where they do that. And he said, absolutely, we are prepared to provide both witness testimony and physical evidence to prove everything that we said in the lawsuit.
That's from Ty Clevenger.
Yes.
Wowee.
I quoted that. That was a quote that I included in my piece.
I mean, listen, I worked off of your piece a great deal last night. But that's the big thing here. And I would hope that after 3 years, you can start seeing just what was going on behind the scenes and all the people who are involved in this. You think after 3 years, maybe they would want to change their tune and come forward. So I don't know.
I'm just so sick and tired of everybody. Like, Ben Shapiro the other day came out and basically said that, you know, the Trump invited all these bad people to the White House that shouldn't have been there and, you know, whatever. I'm tired of everybody assigning any power to what these people think and say. In other words, like, the mainstream media is supposedly like is acting as the gatekeeper of who's accepted and who's not, and who's okay to associate with and who's not. And I think that people should start making that decision on their own, because people have been afraid to talk about this portion of the investigation for fear of being labeled a conspiracy theorist and tarred and feathered in legacy media. And I think it's about time people stopped giving a crap what the legacy media has to say about anybody at all.
Yeah.
Really. It's time for something new.
Well, this is huge. I mean, this story is gigantic. You know, while we're on that, let me ask you something else. It's been a couple of weeks since we heard anything else on the Roger Stone front. As of a couple of weeks ago, it seemed like the closest and the best route we were going to get to actually learning about what did or did not happen with the DNC and their servers and the hacking itself was going to come through the discovery phase that Roger Stone was trying to pull into the realm here. Since then, haven't really heard that much. So,
well, something happened yesterday.
Yes. What's going on?
Late yesterday, a federal judge banned Roger Stone from posting anything on social media after ruling that the longtime confidant of President Trump violated an already strict gag order in his criminal case. Amy Berman Jackson barred Stone from posting on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter, but did not revoke his bail or hold him in contempt. That's what happened. She read the posts aloud. Zoe Tillman from BuzzFeed talked about this on her Twitter timeline. Hold on. The judge and Michaels. Cohen, Kate. Oh. Ooh. They're gonna start releasing information in the Michael Cohen case now that the investigation into the campaign finance is gone, with absolutely no charges filed against the Trump organization. Just saying. He pled guilty to campaign finance violations, and they found none. They found none. Does that make a difference? Does that mean anything to you?
I don't know. I don't know.
I'm trying to find this. Hold on. And then we'll this show was jam packed again. It's going to be busy lately for the next, we didn't even get to talk about Flynn, Frank.
I know, and I don't know anything about that. So damn, that would have been a learning session for me. But yeah, it seems like the next couple of weeks are going to be a little bit worse than usual.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, here it is. 2 hours after the judge barred Roger Stone from posting on Instagram, his wife posted a photo. Okay, here we go. Your lawyer had to twist the fact. Come on. What did he say? I can't find it. I'll put this article in the description box or in the show notes for everybody to read. Zoe Tillman is honestly, she's obviously a leftist. I know that for a fact because there's been a few times where her bias has shown through. But I would recommend her account. I follow her and I really get a lot from her account. Zoe Tillman is at Zoetillman. And she is the BuzzFeed Courts and Justice reporter. And her timeline is just full of all kinds of information that is beneficial. And for the most part, it's very middle of the line and doesn't float into any partisanship whatsoever. I can give her credit for that. It's really, really refreshing. What do you say?
I can't wait to read it. I think you've referenced her from time to time, but I don't remember anything she's done, so...
I have, and she does live tweeting threads from inside of hearings of public interest and stuff. I just like following her. I really do. I know, you know, it's very rare that you can find someone that you know leans left that reports fairly, and she reports fair. She reports fairly. So I'll share her handle for anyone who wants to keep up with court stuff. You know, we've got Technofog, who's huge on the deep dives, but this account is really good. And watch today. She'll tweet something about white supremacy. Just watch.
And then it'll all just go to hell.
Yeah, it'll all go to hell. See?
Oh, man. It is so sticky over here. I can't stand.
I'm sorry. Don't cry, Frank. Don't cry. Oh. I will come over there and pour. Did you see Ice Bay from your friend Hotep trending on Twitter?
No. What happened?
Oh, my gosh. There was a woman, and she works actually for the Federal Bureau of Federal Immigration Enforcement Agency, not ICE. She doesn't work for ICE. I think it's Federal Border and Customs or something like that. And she was protecting Pence on his trip down to Texas. And I guess she's very attractive and took a selfie, and like. People started going after it because it was like, suppose, you know, she should be very serious. She's Latina. She should be very serious at the border. She's standing right in front of all these caged people in the concentration camps and she's taking selfies and looking all hot. So Hotep Jesus called her Ice Bay and he did hashtag Ice Bay and it started trending on Twitter and it went viral.
I got to take a look at this.
Yeah. Hashtag Ice Bay. Hashtag ICEBAE, Ice Bay.
Ice Bay, let's see. All Vibe High said was Ice Bay was fine, and certain group of individuals came in his mentions like zombies. All right, I got to take a look at this.
Yeah, you might even want to cover it on the show. It went viral.
Like, he does great. He really does great stuff.
Just wanted to mention that to you. And I think we're done. We're done. You can... I was going to say where that all came from was because now there are left-leaning folks doing the ICE Destroy ICE Challenge or something where it's like basically a ridiculous knockoff of the Ice Bucket Challenge, but they're using it for immigration. It looks so stupid. So I was going to tell you to do that. Cool yourself down.
You know what I have to do? I have some things building for tonight. I was going to interview John Whitehead today, actually. But I had to push that to Friday. So that's going to be a really interesting one. It's going to be my first pre-recorded interview. And it's all about, you know, police state and shadow government stuff. He wrote a great book, a really eye-opening book I bought back, maybe 2015 or something like that. It's called Battlefield America. Ron Paul actually wrote the foreword for it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, Tracy, anybody out there who is really – concerned about nanny state, surveillance state, police state kind of stuff, and where we've slipped, this would be an amazing book for anybody to pick up. It's called Battlefield America. In fact, you know what? I have it right here because I've been reviewing it in preparation for this interview. And let me read you one thing in the opening that'll really get people. And I've used this on the show before just to be able to set the tone.
Wait, we're in ASMR land now with turning pages.
Let me see. Yeah. Oh, well, I can listen to pages turning. That's very comforting to me. I don't want to listen to somebody eat a goddamn watermelon, though. let me see. I don't want to hear that. Everybody chomping on melons and globs of ugh.
Awful. My Helga loves listening to that stuff. She listens to this one girl who eats like octopus and aloe leaves, and I'm like, oh.
Nope. They can all go to hell.
Gah.
All right. So ready? Listen to this. Here's an opening. This is page 3 of Battlefield America. He just starts putting reality checks, so facts up there. Listen to this one. I think everybody would find this to be very interesting and very useful and very relevant. Fact, despite the fact that we have 46 million Americans living at or below the poverty line, 16 million children living in households. Nope, this is not it. Sorry. My bad.
That's okay.
Where the hell... No. You have to hear this.
No. I'm not telling you to rush or to stop. I'm just telling you.
Here it is. Yeah. Here it is. Fact. Another fact. Thanks to an overabundance of 4,500 plus federal crimes and 400,000 plus rules and regulations, it is estimated that the average American actually commits 3 felonies a day without knowing it.
Yep.
In fact, according to law professor John Baker, quote, there is no one in the United States over the age of 18 who cannot be indicted for some federal crime. That is not an exaggeration, end quote. You just think about that.
Well, you can't dance at the Lincoln Memorial. You get arrested for that.
So, everybody out there,
watch yourselves.
Downsizing.
Agreed. All and right. Before we go, happy birthday again to Robin.
Yes, Robin. Have a good one. I hope that you are cool and dry and having a good day.
You guys have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Crisco Face Val
and Beans. You guys can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com until Friday.
Later.
This is a Jim Fannin Show quick fix on Radio Influence.
Now let's talk about 3 items. I'm going to delve into one of them specifically for you. Here's what we need to be the best that we can be. We need beables, a beable, B-E-A-B-L-E. What's a beable? These are I am statements. I am awesome. That's a beable. I'm patient. That's a beable. Things that you want to be, you must act like it and be it now. A beable. Now, we'll talk about that in depth maybe in another show. But there's also doables. Well, these are the tasks that will lead to these major goals that's going to take you to the vision for 2019 in every arena of your life, not just your primary business arena. And again, we do have a primary arena in our life. It's a major aspect. It doesn't mean it's the most important, but it's the one we spend an inordinate amount of time, energy, and even money. What are your doables? That's your task list to do to reach these goals. But today, I want to talk about the otherable. That's a seeable. S-E-E hyphen A-B-L-E. A seeable. A seeable. That's a major part of your life that you actually see or view on a regular basis. I mean, these are your office desk, your home closet, your garage, your bathroom sink, etc. When your seeables are disorganized, in disarray, or in chaos, it becomes more difficult to accomplish your major vision and goals. Why? Why is that going to be my stumbling block? It's because you're consistently bombarded with the opposite of what helps a champion stay a champion.
The Jim Fannin Show can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.